Let's go to Leviticus 6. Leviticus 5, the last half of the chapter, reveals the trespass offering as applied to the trespasses or wrongs that we do to the Father and the holy things. And we talked about how we trespass against God when we pray, when we worship, when we praise, and the ways in we do that, the ways in which we do that. Tonight we're going to start talking about the ways we trespass against each other and how the offering also covers that. Not just covers it, but you get a reward if you're trespassed against. You get 20% increase. You get restitution plus 20%. So you can let everybody steal from you now.
Is that if you take it in the right spirit, you have to act a certain way when you trespass against?
No, you just have to see. You see what what the offering meant. As you see him, you shall be like him, for you shall see him as he is. And as he is, so are we in the world. There's nothing to do. There's no correct act or way of proceeding. There's only the act of seeing the completion of it. Now, remember, my role is to tell you two things. Remember? One is the crisis that you're in. And two is the power that's available to you. Now, it's easy to identify the trespasses that are listed in Leviticus 6, and you can read it at your own leisure. Leviticus 6, 1 through something or other. It's the lot of obvious things. It's things that you can obviously know that you're doing. I mean, if I hit Pete, then I've trespassed against Pete, and I know I've hit him. The only question then is if I repent, if I see the wrong that I've done. But there's if I murder somebody's cat, you know, whatever. Those are the easy things to see. But there's a whole range of trespasses that are covered. And we're not going to talk about those. I don't care about them. I mean, I care about them, but we as a body have gone too far not to be aware of the obvious wrongs that we do against each other. We can see them. Now I want to talk tonight about the wrongs that you don't know you're doing. Because the trespass offering covers two things with regard to you and your neighbor. It covers the wrongs that you know you've done, and the person knows that he's been done to. Never mind, I don't go into that. Forgive me, Laura.
Yeah.
And the second is the ones that you don't know you've done, but your neighbor knows something has happened, but he doesn't know what it is. Now, I understand that I could hear a little bit from what John said, and John talked about sorcery and witchcraft, I think, or sorcery or something, with regard to accusations. This is a far more subtle form of sorcery. It's subconscious sorcery that is based on the activity or the habit patterns that are caused by the groves. Now, fundamentally what it is, it's when you raise yourself at the expense of someone else. Now, it's manifested in a whole lot of ways. In gossip, in tail-bearing. Why'd you stick your tongue out at me?
You looked at me.
In gossip, in tail-bearing, in slander. And foolish talking, I mean, these are the actual scriptural words, and we'll try to get a definition of what they are. And foolish talking, and jesting, and false accusation is part of this.
Did y'all witness that?
Now, the question is, why do you do it? Why do you gossip? Or talebear, or slander. The root word for those, there's two words that are translated slander or that kind of thing in the New Testament. One of them is diablos, and the other is blasphemy, blasphemo. There's only one that does this. There's only one that bears tales. There's only one that gossips. There's only one that's false jesting. There's only one that's a false accuser. There's only one that secretly accuses without saying anything. It's Diablos. It's the Antichrist. It's your mind. And you do it for one singular reason. Because you must, by definition, because you are the sons or the generation of the viper, you must raise yourself above someone else at their expense in order that you will have an identity. And you do it without realizing it. And you do it all, and many times you do it in the name of fellowship. You do it in the name of talking about stuff. You do it in the name of righteousness. Or you do it in the name of humor. The problem is that if for most of you, or for many of you, if you stop this form of talking, you will have absolutely nothing to talk about. Yes. Now, to be very frank with you, I've wanted to preach this for 5 or 8 or 10 years. Because many of you do it to me automatically. You have no intercourse, no conversation with me, except in this form. Why? Now you do it to each other too, but I'm only aware of when you do it to me.
It's cheaper than joy. And
it's cheaper than honesty. It's hidden hatred. Do you know what the word, you know, where it talks about foolish jesting in Ephesians? You know what that, or jesting, you know where that word comes from? It's the word, to be a jester, or jesting in the Greek, means to be one who can well turn a phrase, one who has wit. Now, wit is greatly admired in the world. Some of you have spent a lifetime developing wit and witticism. Why? Every comic I've known has had the source of his being a comic, his own massive insecurity. One of my best friends is one of the, or used to be best friends, is a burlesque comedian. He makes his living every night doing stand-up comedy in Las Vegas. His name is Artie Brooks. He loves hecklers. He can just destroy anybody with his wit. He's admired. He's looked up to. But it all comes from massive and total insecurity. Now the basis of most humor, of what goes on in the name of humor in the world, is at the expense of someone else. It's hard to be funny when you're not picking on Jewish American princes, or the Poles, or the Aggies, or the blacks, or women. We all laugh at all of those jokes. But what's the source of those humor? What's the source of humor? If you analyze it, you'll find out that the source of humor is to elevate you at the expense of someone else. Either elevate you as an individual, elevate you as a class. In other words, it provides you with a place to stand at the expense of someone else. Now, I'm literally serious. For some of you, I'm not just talking, some of you are in the area of foolish jesting. Some of you in the area of, I mean, if you didn't talebearer, you wouldn't have anything to talk about. If you didn't gossip, you wouldn't have anything to talk about. So now, the other night we talked about removing sports and, you know, soap operas and all that from your, you know, the stupidity of those kinds of conversations. Now if we remove other people as a source of your conversation, what the hell are you going to talk about? Hopefully you'll be shut up to faith. There used to be a cliche that said small people talk about people, middle people talk about things, and big people talk about ideas. You can change that and say spiritual people talk about spirit. Now, if we have humor, if humor as we know it is at the expense of other people, what the hell is, why do we have laughter? Why is laughter and all that a part of us? Well, it's because it shows, it's a way of revealing the joy and the laughter of God that's available to you without being at the expense of someone else. Now, think about, you know, part of me wants to go down the line, but I'm not going to do that. Because I don't know that you know you're guilty of doing it. But stop a minute and think. How much of the time you spend in talking about other people? And you can make it sound so righteous, so caring. How much of your conversation in the last few days or last 2 or 3 weeks is? How much of your conversation is spent, and it's so righteous. How many of your little greetings are digs in disguise? And what do those digs hide? They hide hatred. They hide hatred. Hear me. Now, I'm not pointing fingers, but for many of you, how much of your, the only conversation you have with me is you digging me. But you do it so subtly. Why? Do I intimidate you? So therefore you have to do something to elevate yourself above me subconsciously? If I intimidate you, that's not fellowship. Therefore, you don't hide your hatred. Let's get it out in the open. I'm going to read some scriptures. I happen to have a topical Bible which simplifies this. So.
Can we talk about what you just said? Yeah. Because I think that I've talked about that. And I felt intimidated, and I know that I have digged you. And I know that what you're saying is true. That, you know, sometimes I feel like I just don't have anything to say. I feel like I'm just one of those boring people. And I have insecurity about that. And I want there to be fellowship.
Man, but how do you get there from here? How do you get there? Well, we could give a course in social graces. We could give a course in how to have small talk.
Doug and I worked on the school
system. Huh? No, I mean seriously. Like, I know. Let's stop it. Let's look. If we could somehow spiritualize small talk, and I could give a course in how to have small talk, there's several of you that would gladly join. You'd love it.
How to work God into small talk.
Because that's really what you want.
Some of us could teach.
You don't want fellowship. You want small talk. Why? Because you've never had the capacity to do small talk. You've been too shy. You've been too intimidated. And so therefore, you want something that is so far below what's available, it makes God throw up. Do you understand? Oh, how I want. I hate small talk. And most of the time when I hear it, I just don't pay any attention to it. I just stare off into space or think about something else or tune out. And now, of course, therefore, I'm called an arrogant bastard. But are you good at small talk? Is that something you've cultivated?
Sometimes don't you think it's fear of fellowship that, I just had a thought, that sometimes people have, I guess it's false pride, or they think that they don't want to share with what they're feeling or what's going on with them because they think that they should be able to work it out inside themselves. And
yeah.
That maybe it just wouldn't. And so
that's hate.
Come in and say, well, you know, they're not really, I don't think they'd really be interested. And it's just a whole snowball effect.
Yeah, but my point is to you, God sees that as hate. If you withhold, no, not self-hate. If you're withholding what's happening in you from that person next to you, it's simply the revelation that you truly hate that person.
If you're withholding
what's going on within you, if you withhold from the person that you're with, it's just the evidence that you hate that person.
If what you have to share has to do with...
Doesn't matter. You don't have any control over what is going on within you at any given moment. Cosmically, you have no control about who's in your world at that moment. All of that is God's business. Your only job is to open what's going on to whomever is there. You commend yourself openly to every man's conscience in the sight of God.
I would imagine that would be feel good.
Well, that's all. But my point to you is if you don't do it...
Then you feel bad.
No, forget the... I don't care what you feel or don't feel. If you don't do that... That's the evidence that you hate the person that's next to you.
Oh. Hate in the sense of what?
Hate in the sense of hate.
It's like if you had a child and you didn't share your food with it, people would say, you know, you must hate your kid.
And it comes all from...
I must hate you if I don't share what's with me. I'm not giving it to you. I'm keeping it for myself.
There's a great proverb, and I can't remember which one it is, so you have to look it up. Some of you would like to do that kind of thing. It says, a fool sitteth with his hands folded and eateth his own flesh. Now that's what you're doing when you're sitting there cogitating about your own activities. Spiritually, you're consuming your own flesh.
That's bizarre. I never heard that.
So if somebody asks you, how are you doing?
Tell them.
You know, that's almost like...
You're not of this world.
Really mean that.
You're not of this world.
How many people say, how you doing? And they don't really give a shit.
It doesn't matter.
And then you just tell them anyway. You don't give a shit.
You tell them what you feel at the moment.
It's a great problem.
I'll tell you.
It's like they need to hear it, even if they don't want to hear it or know they need to hear it.
What's going on inside of me?
Yeah. In other words, what they need is fellowship in the true sense. They don't know that, maybe.
Let me tell you a secret. Let me tell you something. Barbara and Harry and I were at Highland Park Cafeteria. And they were talking about stuff, and I didn't even hear what they were talking about, because my mind was gone elsewhere. And I wasn't, it wasn't that I was withholding from them. What was cooking wasn't done yet. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. Now, as soon as I saw it came out. And it was wild, because it was what we're talking about tonight. But it happened, the source of it was, I didn't even recognize it the moment she said it. The source of it was that Barbara said to me, I understand you're temporarily healed again. Now, that hit, I mean, that went through me like a knife. For some reason. It was like a wound. But I didn't know it. It didn't click at the time, but it caused me to start thinking about how we communicate, and so my mind was gone to Timbuktu or wherever it goes. But when I came back to the reality of the world, then this stuff came out. But my point is, if she hadn't said it, this wouldn't have come forth. I mean, if she had felt something, even if what she said, she didn't even mean like it. I mean, we're talking about things that happen at a subconscious level. It's not what somebody says, it's how you perceive that they say it. And so you wound your brother. Now, the question is, we'll probably continue to do this constantly for a time.
But now we'll begin to see what we're doing. It's not something we're going to try and stop. It's just something, again, one of these things that all of a sudden we see what's really happening.
Right.
Something takes place.
Well, does everybody understand what I'm talking about as a trespass? Okay. Now, you understand that the trespass offering repaid you. Now, remember I told you that if there was a trespass against your neighbor or your brother, then what happened? The priest of the sanctuary determined the value of that trespass in shekels, in money, in silver. Now, honey hell, what's the value of the trespass? The reason he placed the value of the trespass, the priest determined it, was it was subjective. There are some wounds that, there are some that can be wounded by a trespass with a movement of the eyes or the head. There are some that couldn't be wounded if you hit him with a hammer. That you'd have to shoot him to wound him. But my point is, in the natural, it would seem like that is insignificant. It was only worth, you know, a half of a nothing. But to shoot somebody in the leg, you know, that's a big trespass. But to God's eyes, the value of this trespass may be 100,000 times more than the person getting shot. You understand?
Yeah.
And that's why it's the priest that determined the value of the trespass. Then what happened? He was caused to repay that, plus the person that was harmed got 20% more. Now that's what I want you to empathize with. That Christ, in completing the trespass offering, no matter what trespass was trespassed against you, you have received its value as determined by the priest vis-a-vis, and you know what I mean, it's a subjective thing. You will feel, you will know differently. Plus 20%, plus more, much more. Now, those of you who are being trespassed against, I want you to hear that. Because that's not where, I'm not going to spend very much time on you that are being trespassed against tonight. Now, some of you trespass in secret. You sit there and think all the thoughts, but never do it. Never say it. Never comes out of your mouth. And the reason is because from the childhood, somehow you have, you know, you've heard all these great cliches about, you know, the strong silent, or, you know, all of them are bullshit. The reason that you're afraid to open your mouth is because you're afraid somebody will see you. You're afraid to open the gate of the city, and so you sit there silently. And I'm going to read some stuff about it if I can find it. Somebody talk. There's another, and somebody go to Leviticus 19. Verse something or other, 9, I think.
What verse?
Leviticus 19.
Yeah, what verse?
9, I think it's 9.
16, talebearer.
Yeah, that's it. I want to talk about, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. Now.
What's that?
What's that? Walking down as a talebearer, 16.
Read verse 16.
I read it already.
Read it out loud.
Okay. Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord. Well, what does that mean?
Okay, now, we're talking, okay, we're going to get off foolish jesting and kidding and whatever. Y'all understand what you do, right? Okay, does everybody understand what I'm talking about what we do in the name of humor? And we always say, well, I was only kidding. That's our great excuse when somebody's feelings are hurt. Well, I was only kidding. I mean, that's the world, right? You understand what you're doing. You're elevating yourself at their expense. Now, if we exhort one another in this arena, you'll understand what we're talking about, right? You're not going to justify yourself. You're not going to excuse yourself. I'm only kidding. Read it. Something. There's one that we've left out. We just barely mentioned with regard to this jesting and. The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not in all his thoughts. His ways are grievous. Thy judgments are far above, out of his sight. As for all his enemies, he puffeth at them. And the word puffeth has the idea that it's a word that means secretly despises.
What is
Psalm 10.
I know what it is. It's going.
He puffeth at them. He saith, he has said in his heart, I shall not be moved, for I shall never be in that adversity. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. Under his tongue is mischief and vanity. Now this is all in secret. He sitteth in the lurking places of the villages, or the body. In the secret places doth he murder the innocent.
But who are we talking about here? I got to be wicked.
We're talking about those that don't express, that murder in private.
Oh, okay. That's the one you
hear. Right. You can't get any great pleasure out of not being a foolish jester. You can't, you know, because everybody's going to pick on Doug in that one, and Harry. I mean, if they stop foolish jesting, they don't have anything to say.
If people wouldn't laugh.
So, but if you jest and you don't say anything.
Well, not just jest. If you.
Well, I mean,
if you murder, yeah, what you're doing by not speaking it, you are secretly hating them. Your hate is in secret.
So the sin is not that you think it, or not that you.
There's no greater. There's
say it honestly.
Either way, all that humor does is hide your hate.
So if you don't say it, then there's no chance of it getting worked out.
Right, but in humor. You're hiding your hate, or in shutting up, you're hiding your hate. Both, in both cases, you're equally evil.
Yeah, if it's there, it's there.
Right.
Well, okay, but I mean that's it. We're evil, period.
Well, but that's not the answer. Here's the other one. He whoso privately slandereth or secretly slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. But again, it's that which you do in secret in your own mind. Psalm 101.
I want to talk a minute about what happened to me today, because we talked about this yesterday about 5:00, and when we talked about it, it was a whirlwind started and the room was moving, and it was like there were earthquakes in me. I was shaking, and then the whirlwind in my mind continued. And when I woke up this morning,
we need to get a 40-watt bulb.
When I woke up this morning, I have clearly prescribed movements and habits and do things in clear order, particularly in the morning. And I got up this morning and I was putting deodorant in the wrong place. I was lost this morning trying in the first 5 minutes I was awake. I was walking into things. But Ollie went to the dentist today, and while he was in the dentist, I sat in a Wendy's for about 35, maybe 40 minutes. And all my life, what has gone inside my head, gone on inside my head, is to look at people and come up with something about them that's wrong with them. They're funny looking, or their behavior's weird, or whatever it is. To look at people all the time, everywhere. Look at people, quickly find something wrong with them, and therefore feel okay. Well, I sat in that Wendy's for, like I said, 40 minutes, and my mind didn't do that today. It was like I was just sitting there looking at people, and I was almost seeing me. I wasn't really seeing me, but a 42-year-long thing didn't happen.
Yeah, I remember you talking to us about that, you know, about the idea of you know, seeing people as from some grove, you know, way back whenever we were talking about groves first, you know, that you would see people as different levels.
One of my favorite things has been to go to a place like the Galleria and just sit and watch people walk by. Because for each person, I come up with something wrong.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen today.
Well, forgive me for not being that organized, but there's another scripture that says, he that doeth this, hateth in secret, hateth his own soul. Now, think about it. Now, I want you to...
I have trouble with this hate.
Hate means you hate...
To me, hate is just an emotion, a feeling.
No, hate is separation.
Yeah.
It's just like love.
Love is unity, hate is separation.
Love's giving.
Yeah, it's total. Hating is death.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, again, for some of you, you've spent a lifetime, your defense mechanism has been the witticisms or the jest. For some of you, your defense mechanism is tale-bearing or gossip. For some of you, your defense mechanism is secret hate, secret slander, secret thoughts.
Okay, what is
secret
slander?
Judgments, huh?
What is slander? And why is that different from
slander? It's all these are the same. They're the same. They're just different gradations of the same concept. And all of it is the mind. And again, I find it interesting. The slander in the New Testament is either diablos or blasfemo, devil or blaspheme. When you slander someone. Now you can slander them in your mind. You understand what I'm saying? And when you slander them in your mind, it's simply another defense mechanism.
What are you defending yourself against?
Huh?
What are you defending?
Exposure.
See yourself?
Seeing what you really like.
So others don't have to see who you really are.
Well, but so you don't have to see who you are.
You keep the cover up from your own eyes.
It's like Jesus said, now that I've come, you have no cloak for your sin.
Right.
That's all these things we're doing all these years.
It's uncloaking.
I mean, from the very beginning, we'll acknowledge that, okay, we're sinners, you know. We're completely sinful. Everything we do is sinful. But it's tearing away the cloaks that we use every day. That's the rough part.
This is actually not, I mean, it's rough and it's earthquakey, but it's joyful at the same time because it's,
Well, I want you to see something, though, that part of this process that by which healing takes place is when it comes to mind that you have done it in the past or you are doing it, and hear me very clearly, because if you don't do this, the scriptures say you will be cut off, not by me, I'm not going to declare you anathema, but by God, that if you do not expose yourself in this arena, that you will be cut off from the people. It's as natural as a snake sloughing off its old skin. You've got to, the exposure, you cannot get by with hiding it any longer. Now, it's far easier for, if you've been doing it by outward manifestations, it's going to take the discernment of the body to bring forth that which is the inward things.
You know, this is all part of something I was looking at the other day about how of trying to raise ourselves to the level of God.
Right.
It's like God judges, and He's the judge. But we try to become judges. And there's some place that says God holds His enemies in derision.
Right.
It's like God's the only one who can do that because He's the only one who can. I mean, He sees perfectly, and it's His world. You know, I mean, He can do it. And all these things are things that we try and do as humans that are really God stuff that we have no business doing. We're trying to be God.
Well, but I want you to see that how you must ask for forgiveness. That's the only way of that this is healed. It's just seen through. Now, it's easy to ask for forgiveness. I mean, it's become a cliche. Well, like, will you forgive me?
It's a close.
But forgiveness You know, I may give you forgiveness if you've been, if I'm the one, the object of it. I may say, yes, I forgive you, and may mean it totally. But it's as though it were of no value unless you understand mm-hmm. why you're doing it. Do you see that?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll pick on some people. You know, Darlene, Gary, Louis, Denise. Your defense mechanism is silence. You think all the thoughts. You can make all the comparisons. The question, but the question is, why are you doing it? And I want you to see that the thought of it in reality is as real as the speaking it. It's spiritually, there is no difference.
I just saw that a dead man can't hurt me. And if you intimidate me or whatever I think you do to me, then I just kill you. And then you can do all that stuff or whatever I perceive, and you can't touch me because you're dead.
Yeah, you murdered.
I've murdered you, and so I'm safe.
Well, you remember, I've always said that,
no fellowship,
you know, to withhold is to hate, to withdraw is to murder.
Yeah. Got bloody hands.
Now, what?
Well, I'm tired of doing this, and I don't want to do it anymore. That's true. But in addition to that, what I really want is I want to stop. I'm tired, and I don't want anymore to do it to myself. I'm starting to see that the reason I do it to other people is yeah. because I do it to myself. I'm tired of hating myself.
Yeah.
You know, that's why a lot of the scriptures, like, I used to make fun of Christians on the radio. When I had the talk show, they'd say, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, I love that one.
You do.
If it's you know, if I can subjectify it.
What does that mean?
Just do unto others who I want to do it unto as I would like those to do it unto me.
Well, I saw something and you said that it's a strange form of duality, hating yourself, you know. You are not one.
You're not denying yourself.
Well, yeah, but let me complete this thought. I'm in the middle of a thought.
Go ahead.
The second one that I used to think was neat is because it just, you know, if I had to love my neighbors as myself a long time ago, I'd have killed everybody. Well, so it's got to mean, it's either got to be full of shit or it means something cosmic. It's only Christ that can say, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And it's only Christ that can say, love your neighbor as yourself. Because the obvious flaws in either one of those, which Christ said all along the prophets, hang on them. You know, then you... there's either a whole big flaw in his way of thinking about it. So the idea of loving yourself is revolutionary. Sounds great in principle. But the only way you will love yourself is to know who you are. And to know who you are will have a symptom or an outward manifestation, and that is that you will commend yourself to every man's conscience openly. You will come before all open face. Now, to not do that, we're talking, I mean, if I'm serious. It says you'll be cut off. Not by, you know.
It's automatic.
It's automatic. You must risk total exposure 24 hours a day. There's no... You know, you can't get by with the shyness trick anymore. You know, as we've talked about before, shyness is just the greatest form of pride. You can't get by with, well, I'm a nice person. And nice persons don't say that. Now, again, I'm serious. Now, I don't want you to make up, you know, try to run around and, but I don't want you to ignore it either. You must ask for forgiveness in order that the bond can be broken, the power of that sorcery. Because it is sorcery. It's magic.
What are you asking forgiveness for? The fact
the
that
fact
you
that you've,
bought it
the
or you didn't say
both,
it? Or
both.
Whatever.
Or that you judge? Or?
Both. You know, people, we see, when we do that, if I go to James 4. I like it when he does that. In the middle of a sentence. lists aren't necessary. It's only because of your unbelief that lists are necessary.
I thought it was forgetful.
No. So you list and have not.
John, that's disgusting.
Yeah, it's, right
before you list and have not. James chapter 4.
You lift and catch.
I know why I don't talk. I don't talk because I don't have the guts. I don't have the liver.
You don't have, no, that's not it at all.
Well, whatever.
It's the fear of, you don't have the fear of God.
That's true.
Other fears.
The fear of man override the fear of God. I speak not this, you know, to confuse, I mean, I speak this to warn you. You don't have to worry about doing anything. If you understand what I'm saying, it'll happen automatically.
Amen.
Now, think about this with regard to the secret slanders, the secret thing, the secret downplaying, the secret things that you do to denigrate someone. Now, unfortunately, a great deal of this is done in marriages.
Y'all do that? That ain't how I used
to. Okay, listen. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Verse 10. Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother, speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judgest the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgest another? Now, I mean, it's easy to, you know, you can say, well, you dumbass. You know. So that's easy to think, okay, he's judging somebody. But if you sit there and think it, well, I'm not, you know. I want you to see that the act of thinking it spiritually, psychically, is in many ways it's more powerful than the act of not speaking it, if it's thought. And it is this thing called sorcery.
Hey, we don't think our own thought. I mean, we don't make up our thoughts. Our thoughts happen, right? And so if they happen, and then we suddenly find ourselves thinking it, then our response is to go ask forgiveness.
Are you saying they just drop in, that they're not a product of your Antichrist mind?
Yeah. Where do they come from?
They come from the Antichrist, from your mind. You are, they're not external to you.
Okay, but I don't sit there and make up my thoughts.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Your subconscious does.
Where do they come from?
They drop in. I mean, they're from the Antichrist source.
But your mind is the Antichrist. Okay. It doesn't need
but
any
I
help.
I don't make them happen.
Oh, yes, you
they
do.
Happen.
No.
You sit there and thoughts come. You don't sit there. Well,
where do the thoughts come
think
from?
About this.
Okay, where do they come from?
You mean out of
the ethers?
Well, like subconscious and your conscious.
No, wait a minute. No. Let's get this. Where do they come from?
This is a good one.
They come from.
Well.
No. Wait a minute. Where do they come from?
Japan. Well, they are in your mind. They're dropped in by the devil.
They're dropped in by an external devil. And he's wandering around and he whaps you.
Well, I mean,
that's what taught in charismatic circles.
Because you couldn't possibly.
Now, think about it. Wait a minute. I want you, we've got to face this one. In charismatic circles, you are taught that those thoughts come from an external devil.
Fiery darts.
And they are the thoughts that come into your head. And you can resist them and say, get out of here, thoughts. Now, that's what you believe. They come from an external source.
Well, it's, external. I mean, my mind is part of who I am, so it's not external in the sense that...
Physically external.
Yeah, I'm an extension of my mind or vice versa.
Good.
But I mean... My point is, thoughts happen. You don't sit there and say, well, I'm going to think nasty things about John here for a minute and then work them up. I mean,
go to Matthew 6.
I look around and they, boom, they just are there.
Go to Matthew 6.
So you
can't repent unless you're responsible.
No, Matthew 12. No, wait a minute. Let's let the scripture.
Well,
Matthew 12.
This is
not Mark 12. Matthew 12. Verse 33. Matthew 12, verse 33. Would you sit down? Oh, Matthew 12, verse 33.
She's almost got me.
Listen. Either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers. Now remember what that says. In the Greek it says, O sons of the snake. So generation of vipers sounds nicer. Sons of the serpent. O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? Well, he's just talking to the Pharisees. Or he's just talking to those Jew boys. You see, we all talk about this. I'm not judging your brother. I'm just a fruit inspector. You dumb. I'm not judging your brother. I'm just his fruit inspector. Oh, I used to get so tired of hearing, because I was visible. You know, I'm serious. When I, 17 days after I was a believer, I'm on television, hosting Christian talk shows.
Visible fruit, is it?
I'm a visible fruit, yeah. And all these guys, they're coming on and they got their all outfit and their sweet little coiffed hair. And I wore sandals and jeans and a ragged t-shirt on television. And all these, everybody around me, I'm hosting the talk show. And he's, boy, did I, and yeah, I wouldn't even know. They didn't call me a hippie. I was worse. I didn't have long hair.
You should have known better.
They just said, well, you're just a young believer. When when God is dealing with you, then you'll start to, he'll, first of all, what will happen? No, you won't be so radical anymore. That's what they always told me. You're a young believer, and as God matures you, you won't be so radical anymore. But then your fruit will start being good. You'll start wearing suits, and you won't talk so badly to us. Man, but the opposite's been true. I've become more radical every year that I've been a believer. You being evil, How can you expect to speak good things? Why are you evil? For one reason. Genetically, you are of your father, the devil. Unless you know that, unless you've come to understand that, you will always and forever be an enemy of the cross of Christ. You will always try to improve self. You will always try to hide self. You will always act. You will act automatically. I'm here to tell you that if God cannot deal with me and my honesty and my speaking forth whatever is there, then he's not worth my time. There's no faith if I have to protect the words that I speak. There's no faith if I have to think something in my head that isn't said to you. It's without faith. It's apistis. It's no faith. And if I have to hide my hatred of you and my being intimidated by you or being whatever by you, by false humor, then God isn't worthy of the time of the day. If God can't deal with me in my total honesty as I am, and me not give one hoot whether it's good or evil, I don't want anything to do with that God. If I have to sit and try to figure out beforehand what I'm going to say, first of all, it'll be boring as hell, as most of you are. And second, there's no God, there's no faith. Why are you boring? Why do you bore yourselves? Because you don't prophesy. You sit around and second guess yourselves, take yourself seriously, second guess what you're thinking about your brother, sit around and think up witticisms to say to somebody to protect your own insecurity. You're judging your own selves constantly. There's no faith. There's no expenditure of self. There's only protection of self. Now, you've seen for all these years the effect of protecting yourself, of figuring it out. You understand? Figuring it out is just as evil. If God isn't faithful in me prophesying, he's not faithful in anything. If he's not faithful in me speaking whatever comes to my mind without second-guessing it, and he's not faithful in anything. If I can't say to, you know, you know what I mean. Now, that's an arena that where Paul said to be followers of me. I think that that's one arena that I can honestly say, be ye a follower of me. That I can honestly say that what is there I speak. Now, there's a lot of it that gets hidden that I don't even realize is there that I need your help to uncover. But if it's there in my head, I'm going to speak it. I want you to do it. Now read the rest of this. Either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasures bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Now that's heavy duty. Now the words, remember, this word for word it can equally mean it's a word to God is a thought, or it doesn't matter whether it's thought or there. It doesn't matter whether it's here or here. Now, those of you who sit around in secret places, lurking in the city streets, murdering everybody around you, it's got to stop. Now, the only way you'll know that it can stop is, first of all, that everyone that you have offended, everyone that you have trespassed. Now, there's a mystery that's going on here, in that you need me to free you, and I need you to free me. I mean, in all horizontal positions. There's no vertical position in this arena. It's all horizontal. God is letting it take place. Letting, remember?
I don't know what you mean by that. God is letting what take place?
He's not coming down and forcing the action. We have to let it happen. Let means to break the dam.
I just thought I bought a crank card for Valentine's Day.
Now,
so
in this arena, I want you to, if it's necessary to make a list, make a list. But I want you, because the only way to break the power of this witchcraft is by confession and forgiveness. That's the arena by which the power is broken. And that you and the person that you are judging can be freed.
Now, this obviously isn't just the people
up here, right? Well, you have to start. Judgment first must begin at the house of God.
Well, the people I most think about aren't the people in here, the people that I really don't deal with here. Those are the people I have judgment against.
Well, hopefully this will happen and you'll become a sign and a wonder and automatically, but it first has to take place in here. It's going to kill you.
Let me go back and work on this thought thing for a minute. When the thoughts happen, what will take place now that we've heard these words is we'll recognize, hey, there it is.
And, if we exhort one another.
And yeah. And then if I see that I'm murdering you by hiding in my little closet here and separating, then I will come and ask your forgiveness.
But you'll have to say why.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, now, and now, you know, or whoever, but we'll forgive each other if we see, but the prayer is that we'll see why we do it.
Yeah. See why we think that way, or why...
No, why we keep it secret.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Why we jest. Now, all of us are guilty, you know, it's just like, all of us are guilty of jesting, of slander, of tale-bearing, of secrets. But it's just like in the graces, you know, with the grace of Abraham, the grace of Isaac, the grace of Jacob. One is dominant. One of those, either the tale-bearing or the secret or the jesting, you know, one of them is dominant in each one of you.
One of them is our own special unspiritual gift.
Right, your unspiritual gift. But do you see how these? The effect may not be seen in a day or 2 days or 3 days or 5 days of this, but it is a cancer on the body of Christ. But and I'll tell you, if you think it and don't say it, I am convinced that it does more harm to the person you're thinking it about. I mean, you're playing magic again, as John's been talking about. It's sorcery.
It's that place you talked about the other night about every time you come up to this place and you can't go around it, you can't go over it, there's no way but right through it. And otherwise, you're just going to start, you fall back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to destroy everything. I mean, you can't
you can't skip a step in this. I mean, this is the place where we are right now.
Well, please believe me, no matter how onerous it seems at any given moment, all God requires from you is that you speak what is there without judging whether it's good or evil. That's heavy duty. But it's so simple. It's the child's position.
What Gary was saying about the, you know, where the thoughts come from, this thing Paul was talking about where he says, you know, I want to do this, but I end up doing this. It's like, it just depends. You've got thoughts that come up that say your other thoughts are bad. That doesn't mean that your other thoughts that you think were bad came to you involuntarily, whereas these thoughts came to you, that's the real you. It's you just got all kinds of thoughts that are, you know, coming against all your other thoughts.
Let me ask you a question. When you ask the question, where are my thoughts coming from, who is my?
Just part of who I am. I mean, I don't, there's a place, I don't generate my thoughts, I don't feel like. My thoughts happen. I don't create them consciously. They come here, they come there, I look at someone and maybe I'll judge, maybe I'll laugh or whatever.
Do you think God thoughts?
Yeah.
What are they like?
Same thing, they come.
But what are God thoughts like?
I think it's bringing thoughts into captivity is that part.
But what does that mean? How do you bring, it says, cast down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God and bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. What does that mean? How do you bring a thought into the obedience of Christ?
To me, it's sometimes wrestling that thought into captivity, I guess, and...
Well, that's
channeling it through what I know.
But that's the key. That's no, never mind. We're gonna quit. The key is, hear me. You cannot think a God thought. All thoughts that you can think about have their origin in the evil one. Because all thoughts that you can think about end up in a position in which you are the object of the thought. That's why God said to be his disciple you must give no thought. So how do you live then? How do you deny yourself? How do you abandon yourself? Well, the first thing you have to recognize is there's no thought that you can think. You sit around and dwell on it. You sit around and figure it out. You sit around and play all those little games. There, every arena, that arena is not God. It's not Gary Buchner. It's the Antichrist. It's the son of Satan. Now, you resist that, and he'll flee. Do you understand what I'm saying? You can't think a thought. You do not have free will. There are only two wills expressed in the universe, the will of Satan and the will of God. The will of God is only expressed in the abandonment of yourself. This is back to first, this is the beginning of the first, this is the first love. This is what I told you 10 years ago. Abandon yourself. Pick up your cross and follow him.
But if you don't have free will, how can you do that?
When you get sick and tired, and you find that all those things are vomit. I don't want to do that anymore. But most of us love to dwell in that arena. Oh, we love to muse on our little thoughts. We can make ourselves real heroes in our little thoughts. We can have all kinds of nice life. We can have all kinds of little dreams fulfilled. We can do all kinds of nice little things. Sometimes we even say they're God things. You sit there and dwell and muse on your own talents, your own lack of talents, your own career, your own little goals, your own little ambitions. You are sitting and you're the dog returning to its own vomit. I don't care if it's done in the name of God and all kinds of nice spiritual stuff. Abandon yourself. Take no thought for your life in any dimension. Any other arena is the ground of Satan. And you've denied the cross and you've become an enemy of the cross of Christ. Amen. How do you then bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ? You see it on the cross and forget it.
Yeah, forget the self-analyze.
You neglect it. Forgetting those things that are behind. How do you do that? By seeing they're of no value. By seeing and apprehending that which Christ is and has done. And that it's finished. And all your little plans and dreams and ambitions and musings are the vomit that you're returning to. That's what we're trying to do. We're seeing, we're apprehending more and more and more of who and what Jesus is. And as we do, again, life is a series of competing stimuli. And as there's no stimuli in the world that can withstand the revelation of Christ. You know, I go home or talk to people and they say, "Oh my God, you're so brilliant." Well, I'm not brilliant. But revelation slays all intelligence. I don't care how much you can sit there and think about things. It is pure, abject bullshit. And you're eating it and loving it. Now, where do your thoughts come from? Let this mind be in you which was also in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, thought it not something to be grasped to be equal with God, but emptied himself. And made. Again, picture this. Every single time your mind is dwelling on you or yours, you are the fool sitting there with your hands folded eating your own flesh. Or you're the dog returning to its own vomit. Either one of those pictures, you can. But it's so fun. Well, you need your taste buds revised. That's 10 o'clock, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. It's time to quit.